Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hi, I'm Susie Backos, and I'm joined by Kaper today, and we're part of Soho Works. If you're not familiar with Soho Works, it's like the co-working arm of Soho House, where there's loads of a network of co-working spaces that people can use. And we're in London, New York and LA. And then we're presenting Table Talk, which is a Soho Works born event where we get to know like London's hottest like creatives in different industries, from like food and fashion to also comedy. So that's why we've got Kate Curd on.
Thank you. It's nice to see most people came dressed as chairs, but this is it's fun. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're
nice to be here. Yeah, it shows how popular I am. Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm great. Thank you. Yeah. How are you?
First advertising week.
Yeah. I didn't even know this existed, but it's nice to be here. It sounds like the sofas look brilliant. I wish I was down there, to be fair.
I know, we might have to get on it after. So we just wanted to discuss you, your career, how you've got to the point that you are in now. How did it all start? Did you always want to be in comedy and that?
I think everything makes sense in hindsight, but I was always a gobby little so-and-so, but there's that thing that people say that look at me gene. So I was always that kid that wanted to like present in assemblies and things like that at school. But I never really thought like comedy was a viable option in life up until I sort of got to uni and I was just like sitting around my course and I didn't really enjoy it. And I'm looking around at everybody else going, right, you lot really care about this, innit? And I realized that wasn't for me. And I entered a KISS 100 competition to be a presenter on their platform. And I got through to the final 25 without having any sort of experience.
Did.
Come on, obviously. That was wild because we got you got invited to their offices and their studios. And it was like, for somebody that had never even understood what any of that felt like or anything in the entertainment industry felt like, it was like, oh, what, people get paid for this? People get paid for actually
having a laugh.
Yeah, and enjoying themselves. And it was like, it was mad to me. And it was funny being there, obviously, like, it's sort of like when you buy a lottery ticket and you start like thinking about what you're going to spend the money on. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be a presenter. How am I going to deal with this newfound fame? But obviously that didn't happen. But it was from that where I started feeling like, oh, I want to do something in the entertainment industry. And people were always like, you're very funny. Even when I worked in like different offices, I'd always been a star through making people laugh and that sort of stuff. And I started hosting live music and poetry nights.
Were you doing the poetry yourself?
No. God, no. Not none of that pretentious crap.
No offense to any poets in the
no
audience.
No full offense intended. I was doing a lot of that. And then people were like, you should get into stand-up. And then I did get up at a comedy night once and they gave me 5 minutes and I'd done about 2.5. I got a laugh and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
The buzz off it.
Yeah, not even just the buzz, but it was just the idea that you could elicit a reaction in people at the same time in a room. There's a sort of level of power in it. That's quite funny. You put certain words in a certain order and you make people happy. And it was crazy to me, but it was the most nerve-wracking thing I'd ever done in my life. My leg was shaking, all sorts. And I've never had that before. Like, I could do public speaking, whatever, but that was when the pressure is to make people laugh, it's a different experience. But then from that, I just started going from there and doing a lot more gigs and trying to write material and gradually it just got to a stage where it was like you build up your material and you build up your confidence.
Was it quite tough? Did you find when you first stood up there, like, because when my friends who do comedy, Natalie's here tonight, and when they say 5 minutes, I think, God, 5 minutes sounds like such a long time to be on stage and if you are bombing, for example, and it's not doing very well, I just imagine, how does that... You must have had moments where you're like, oh my God, this...
Not very many of them.
Come on, guys. This is a professional.
Do you know what? I think you get... a lot of people talk about comedians finding their voice. Mm. And I don't... the way I see that is you being comfortable enough to be the person you are off stage, on stage. And that comes with a lot of experience as well as a lot of belief in yourself. So I got to a stage, I think, after a while where it almost didn't matter what people's opinion was of me because I'd made so many audiences laugh beforehand anyway. So then once you get on stage, you're not rushing for the laugh or you're not desperate with it. I feel like audiences can really tell when somebody's trying to force it or they're not being themselves. And I think now more than ever, I think you probably see it in every aspect of life. People value authenticity so much more because I think this is why, like, you get things on social media that are so popular because it's the rawness of it that people appreciate, and they don't want that polished sort of refined look all the time. And it's if you can be yourself authentically,
100%.
People really resonate with that.
I think that's probably a thing of why TikTok does so well and why you can be like, anybody can be really big on there, whereas like Instagram has a bit more of a polished feel, whereas on TikTok you could be a bit more raw yourself, and you know, your friend that you know that you've grown up with could be really big on there, because people resonate. Like,
I think with all social media, and it just depends on how you use it. I just think, obviously, I put the same things on different platforms as well, just because I feel like it's a representation of me, and I don't want to like sort of like put a gloss over what I put on Instagram or on whatever. I just think if it all depends on what you're putting out there and what your field of work is. Yeah. But like in terms of what I do, it's people getting a glimpse of my humor and my personality and me putting that out there. And for me to try and present myself as something I'm not, it's going to be one, very exhausting and too much hard work. Whereas if I could just be myself and put it out there, then it's going to pay its dividends much more than anything else. I get a lot of people overthinking content a lot of the time as well, man. I just tell people, like, I've got a friend called Sindhu V, she's a comedian, and she was like, oh, okay, I'm too old for social media, and what am I going to... And I was like, just get the camera and just do... You're funny. Just put out what you want. And then she ended up getting 150,000 followers in like a week. And I was so vexed. She had so much more than me.
I shouldn't have given her good advice.
It was just the fact that, like, she was being herself. Also, because now the world is so big.
Yeah.
You can find your little audience in any aspect of it.
That was actually going to be what I was going to say to you next. Actually, hold on. I forgot to say, if you've got any questions, please put it in the app on Slido and we'll read them out at the end. I forgot. What I was going to say, do you think it's tougher now to stand out when so many people are online and so many people kind of boom through social media?
Yes and no. I think with social media and stuff like that, you get what you put out.
Yeah.
In a sense. I think I can only talk for comedy with confidence, really. But I think now more than ever, you've got people being able to transfer what they do online into... try and translate that into ticket sales. I mean, you've got people that are personal trainers selling out the Apollo. You've got doctors selling out live venues from the content that they're doing. I mean, I don't know what they're doing in their shows, but they're selling out these venues, right? So I think if you're an artist or you're a comedian or whatever, you should be looking at that with confidence as opposed to looking at it going, oh, why are they taking whatever? I think there's more comedians than ever probably able to tour now, but whether we'll get that big overarching star like we used to, that everybody knows from your grandma to the little kid, your little brother or sister, I don't think we're going to get that in future. I think the way we consume media in general and the way we consume comedy, everybody has their own little niche. Your algorithm will be different
absolutely
to everybody you live with. Like you could be married to somebody and you've got different things coming up on your on your feeds, and we spend so much time on our phones that you're going to be able to find like-minded individuals and people that resonate with the stuff you put out there. It's about trying to find them. And I think we're in a very interesting time period now where I think all those old structures and the way you think about things before, you sort of have to dismantle that and unlearn a lot of those. Like, for example, we were talking off stage about the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and stuff for comedians. And I think you don't need to go up to Edinburgh and do that. You can go direct to your audience and you can sell stuff to them, or you can sell your tickets or whatever it is, you can do it. I don't think people tell you, oh, you've got to do this. But when you start peeling back and you go, but why? They don't really have answers apart from, well, it's always been done this way. That's where it boils down to. Like, if you want to do something and there's a vision that you believe in, you've almost got to be delusional in a sense and go, this is going to work.
Yeah.
And put it out there.
Yeah. Because not everyone that is successful and is big has been through the whole Edinburgh Fringe circuit, for example, just using that example, because I think people possibly, they go to school, they go to uni, and they follow all of these steps that we're told that you have to do. But actually now, with so many opportunities, not just social media, everything, of how easy we are connected and how you can self-publish, even things like that, I suppose you could do.
I mean, the greatest example is working from home. If you'd have suggested it before the pandemic, people would have looked at you like you're lazy, you're a skiver, you're this, that, the other. But when it became a necessity, everybody was like quick to pivot, and they were so like, everybody sort of found out what Zoom was, and everybody started using it. And all it ever takes is one person to go, I'm not doing that, I'm doing it like this. And then people go, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
That's how it's done. And that's how you begin to see shifts in all sorts of different landscapes.
Absolutely. In terms of when you started to do your own thing and build a following and become your own comedian, what things did you find quite difficult in that realm? Like, what challenges?
I think when I was trying to get out there, like I did the circuit, and I was gigging every weekend. But the biggest sort of challenge for me was at that time trying to get on TV. And I found with TV, they sort of love to put you in a box and go, what are you? Who are you? And they always want that sort of angle of like a sob story or like a box ticking exercise or whatever. And I didn't fit into any of those, and I sort of didn't subscribe to any of those. And I didn't like that. So I put my stuff out online. I put an hour special on my YouTube channel. And then from that, within a month after it coming out, Live at the Apollo were like, hey, do you want to do Live at the Apollo? And it was like, oh, like now I see what's going on, right? Yeah. Like, and that's not just to discredit them, but it's just that sometimes you have to show and not tell people, right? And I'm a big advocate of that. Show people, don't tell them. Like, if you think you're the best, stop telling people you're the best. Actually go and show them. Or if you think you're talented, or you think you've got this ability to do something, put it together and get it done. And it's easier than ever now to be able to do that. But the biggest challenge I found was trying to convince people that I was good enough.
Yeah.
Like to be on TV shows and to be able to do all of that stuff. But once you start almost when you stop caring about people's approval and validation,
surely you must have to not care what people think about you.
Well, you do, because the audience are there and they give feedback. So if I don't care what they found funny, I'm not going to be a good comedian, am I? Right? Like I don't care. It makes me laugh. But that's not the way it goes. Like, I think with comedy in general, like, the audience are the biggest, they're the biggest thing that tells you whether you're funny or not, or whether you're going to be successful or not. That's why it's great. We get that in real time. So we know whether we're doing something that's working or not, which is a bit different on social media, where you're waiting for the likes to come in, and then you could blame it on the algorithm. You're like, no, man, Facebook don't want me to to succeed. But in real life, you can't really fake that.
Yeah. How do you find the content stuff compared to the live stuff as a comedian?
They're different skill sets. I think live performance in any aspect, you can't replicate it. I think this is what something I tell, like, a lot of younger people, like Gen Z, when they're like, oh, when's it going to be on YouTube? When's it going to be on? And I'm like, bro, go out, enjoy yourself, actually touch grass. Like, go out with your mates. It's a tenner a ticket. It's like, it's a cheap night out. You have a great time. And I think you can't replicate that live experience within content. And I think it's a different skill set to have. If you're funny online, sometimes that can't translate onto stage. And if you're not funny on stage, and if you're funny on stage, sometimes it doesn't translate into video. So you've got to treat each discipline with the respect it requires. With stand-up, it's about building a craft. It's about being in those rooms where it's just 20 people and being able to capture their attention and then moving on to bigger rooms and being able to do the same thing. And with online as well, you've got to show that the respect it deserves as well. Like, you can't just go, oh, I'm going to do what I do on stage online. It doesn't work like that. You've got to, the same way you go to open mic nights and perform in front of 10 people, you've got to be able to put in the work online as well to see what works, what doesn't work.
Because I think people, when they think of content, they think it's really easy. Like, oh, it's such a laugh and it's so easy for you to do. But actually, like, the thought process behind it and then cutting up and editing it and posting it and everything. Yeah,
well, I've got friends that solely do stuff online and they record hours just for a minute's worth of content, for a funny video that lasts a minute. They'll look at the video frame by frame. They'll look at the analytics. They'll have like three different angles of shots that they're doing, but then it pays dividends because they're able to monetize that on different platforms.
When it comes to writing your stage show, because you did Apollo and you did, what were the other big... You did a tour.
The last tour I did, the finale was at a Hammersmith Apollo,
How does it come when it comes to writing it? Because it obviously it's a whole piece. How does that work? What's your process in writing it?
I find like I'm my funniest when I'm on stage or I'm around my friends and I'll have like these loose ideas and when I'm on stage at a club or something, I'll go through these ideas that I have and then I'll flesh it out there. I don't do too much writing where I'm just sat in front of a laptop writing it out verbatim.
Yeah.
Although I'd love to have that. I mean, it's different when I'm writing for other people. I can do it like that. So when I write for other people, when I write on TV shows, I can write on a laptop. But when it's myself, I tend to go on stage and just mess around and have fun and then have the ideas. I've got loads of ideas in my notes that I'll talk about, like, and they won't make sense to anybody else. But for me, I'm like, oh, that's what I meant by that. That's what I mean by that. And then I sometimes say something funny in front of my friends or whatever and they laugh and then I write that down.
Yeah.
And then I build on that as well in my head. Sometimes just going for a walk and doing it. I mean, everybody's got their own writing style. It's just about finding out what makes you comfortable. It's about getting into that stage where you're most comfortable. And I don't think anybody's ever been their funniest when they're just sat in front of a laptop. Yeah.
So like real life moments, essentially, that you kind of build on.
Yeah, my experiences, stuff that annoys me. Like sometimes stuff I'm ranting about, that kind of thing,
And what do you like about the industry and what would you change about the industry when it comes to comedy?
What would I change? I do think that in this country in particular, it can be quite elitist to get into the arts. It can be, I think a lot of the decision makers are perhaps not necessarily open to people from different backgrounds. There's not necessarily a large diversity of thought in comedy in this country. There's more, just because somebody looks diverse doesn't mean that they have a diverse level. Do you know what I mean? It's not absolutely true diversity. And like The Fringe is a great example of that. I think whenever you see a working class comic or a comic from a sort of unrepresented background, they're sort of treated with a level of disdain in the reviews because they're not people don't understand them.
Right.
Whereas it's not that they're not funny, it's just that they're not in front of the right audience. And I think that a lot of the decision makers all sort of come from similar backgrounds. Mm. Whereas I feel like in America perhaps it's a little bit different because they just look at it, do you make money? And they put it out there, whereas here we sort of have to like go, oh no, but what am I learning from it? And they try and like make humor more than it is. And what I love about the industry, I guess, it's the freedom of expression. You get people from different backgrounds being able to make people laugh anywhere in the world. And I think that there's beauty in that. And if you look at comedians when they're together, they're like, they they shouldn't be friends. Like, you'll see, like, when you see a gang of comedians together, they're all yeah. like different places.
Like, the in between is a little bit.
Yeah. It looks so weird. Like, if you see comedians together when they're going over to like do shows internationally, it's like one guy's in like Jordans and a hat, and then the other guy's just like corduroy.
And you're like, where do
these two know each other? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen questions pop up, and we've only got a few minutes left. So, should we do it?
Okay, yeah.
What frustrates you about comedy?
I think, like I was saying, I think in this country, probably the opportunities aren't given to a lot of people. I think there's fewer opportunities on TV and those places now as well. But I think it's not necessarily a meritocracy when it comes to that side of things, which is fine, because now there's like other avenues for people to go down. But I think that would probably be the main thing, really.
Yeah. How do you compare jokes landing online versus in front of a crowd?
It's a different experience.
Yeah.
I think when there's nothing like making a room of people laugh at the same time in unison. But also it's great when you just see like loads of laughing emojis over a post as well. But it doesn't compare to having a room of like 3,000 people.
Yeah.
4,000 people laughing at what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and what I love sometimes is like you get in a comedy club, you'll be in a room of 400 people, and there's moments of improv that never leave that room that are so funny that you can't replicate anywhere else. And those groups of people all love that moment because it's never going to go anywhere else. Nobody else is going to experience it. And that's my life.
Like if you get like a heckler in the stage or something like that, like those moments. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those moments are really funny. Whereas if you got somebody writing a nasty comment in your comments, you're just like, if I don't want to encourage a pile on, but at the same time, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? But it's very different in that sense. It doesn't come across as funny when you're messaging a troll.
Yeah. right. This one's a mouthful. Is cancel culture making your comedy content challenging? Do you think people need to lighten up, or are we facing a Gen Z tiptoe approach? Having to say sorry in 10 years down the road?
I think this is always an interesting one, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot is made of cancel culture, and I don't really subscribe to it too often, to be honest with you. I think... There's always been parameters about what you can joke about and what you can't, depending on what time period we've been in. And I think the skill in being a comedian is being able to make as many people laugh as possible. I mean, Cat Williams had a great answer to this sort of question where he said, if you lowered the net in the NBA, a lot more people would make the league, right? And I think that's the thing with comedy as well. If you are making jokes that are lazy and audiences have now become a lot more hip to certain things, then of course they're not going to laugh at it, right? But the skill is, if you're going to make a joke about a particular set of people, if you can do the joke in front of them, that's the litmus test for me. If you're going to make a joke about a particular, whether it's gay people or black people or Muslims or whatever, if you can do the joke in a room full of those people and it's funny, then you're skilled enough to tell that joke anywhere. But I think nowadays people use cancel culture as an excuse to say, you can't say anything these days. Well, no, you probably haven't put in the work to make that joke work. On the flip side, I do think that we do have a culture online where people do want to be outraged about certain things because there's sort of like a currency in, I don't know whether it's like seeming the most pious or the most righteous.
Yeah.
But I think when things are taken out of context sometimes and a short clip is just shown online without the...
Yeah,
the actual it can distort the way things are seen, but I think it's overblown in anything, right? With any stretch of the argument, if you're looking at it from both sides, I think it's always somewhere in the middle, and I think you just got to be more skilled with the parameters that you have. I mean, if you look back at some specials, like people will talk about Eddie Murphy Raw being like one of the greatest specials ever, but you go back to a lot of that stuff and you're like,
yeah,
like, but it was the sign of the times.
100%.
Yeah.
How do you determine what clips to share online so it doesn't take away from your live show? I think that's a really good question.
Because
you want to get people in, don't you?
Yeah, usually I put in material that I'm ready to burn and I don't want to put on. If I'm putting out material, I'm putting out jokes that I don't tell on stage anymore. So then when people come, they're not seeing the same. Comedy's different to music. Musicians can go and have one great album and tour the world forever. But with comedians, you can't tell the same joke twice to people. So once I put it online, I don't do it on stage ever again. So that's how I do that. But then there'll be elements where it's a bit of improv, it's a bit of crowd work that I know that's not going to be replicated anyway. So I put that out there as well sometimes. But then I'll have little sketch ideas sometimes that I think of and I'm like, let me just do that. And then I put that online as well. Yeah.
Okay, last one, unless anyone wants to put their hands up after, which I'll allow. Do you struggle giving great ideas to others, in brackets, when you are writing, versus keeping the gold for your own sets? Because you do write as well, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. No, I don't struggle, because I feel like as long as a joke is funny and I see the joke pay off, that's enough for me sometimes. But I think writing for other people sometimes can be quite liberating, in a sense where there are jokes that other people can tell that I can't tell. So it's about getting into the mind frame that that person's in. And I'll give you a great example. I was working on a particular TV show and I gave them jokes to roast Jimmy Carr with. Now, I don't have a relationship with Jimmy Carr for me to say some of the stuff that I was writing for this person to say, but they do. So then when they were saying it, and it was paying off, I was like, oh, great, wonderful, it worked. Yeah. But I couldn't say that because they'll be like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, well, you don't have the respect in order for you to be able to do that. Got it. in that sense, it's a lot more liberating. And it's a different skill. Like, I get myself into the mind state of what somebody else is like and what their voice is and what the tone is for a particular TV show, or what their tone is on a particular setting to be able to write for that. And it's not necessarily stuff that I would be passionate about. Like, I can make stuff funny that I don't really want to talk about on stage myself, but I know that other people would want to hear about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Anyone else that wants to get one in? If not, then we're just going to say thank you so much. And
wonderful. Thanks for having me.
So thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.